Meeting will come to order. Representative Rosenthal, have you had a chance to pursue the peruse the minutes for March 20th?
Getting there.
Would you move them?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any corrections, additions, or otherwise? If not, all in favor of the minutes of Friday, March 20th, signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Adopted. We're going to probably jump around on the agenda here so that we can move some people out that have to go elsewhere or whatever. So the first bill up will be House File 2751 Mason. Would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. And actually, is this one going to go to the Transportation Finance as well, or just to the floor?
What? Oh, it goes to General Register.
Okay, to the General Register.
Yes.
Thank you. Chair, members, this bill is about the Transportation Accessibility Advisory Committee, and it's basically to get the rules up to speed in which the way the current committee is currently working, and I'll let our testifier give you the details.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ron Biss, and I chair the Metropolitan Council of Transportation Accessibility Advisory Committee. I've been in that position for the last 7 years. I've been a member of the committee for 20 years. As I proceed through my testimony, I'll refer to the committee as TAC instead of trying to stumble over the long definition all the time. Anyway, going back, when I first joined the committee, the primary focus of the committee revolved around what we call today's metro mobility or metro areas fair transit system. Well, as time went on, one of the first things back in those days was we started spending some time advising or having our input to Metro Transit as they began to in-phase Metro Transit buses that were wheelchair accessible. Obviously, it couldn't be done overnight, so we talked a lot about which routes should be prioritized. Then as time went on, we started spending time when the design and construction of the Hiawatha Corridor came around, spending a fair amount of time discussing the light rail vehicles as well as station design and accessibility. And then as time has continued on, we've also, with the Central Corridor, spent a fair amount of time talking more so in the area of pedestrian ways on that, with the understanding that the other areas that we had advocated for that were implemented would carry through from the Hiawatha Corridor. Some of the other activities, we've had input on most of the BRT service corridors throughout the area. We've also had input on the design of the Target Field Transit Station, and then also adjacent to that, the interchange, input on that. Also with the change over or the up renovating of the Union Depot and aspects that accommodate transportation in there. Also, some of our activity is giving feedback, input on some of the different policies and so on, such as Transportation Policy Plan, Thrive MSP 2040, and so on within the Met Council. Then our committee has also been able to have representation on some of MnDOT study groups, and so we've been able to help express our feelings and thoughts as a committee to those groups. So with what we're asking in this change or in this bill is to, as Representative Mason indicated, basically to have the language change to parallel more what our activities currently are, and that would coincide would primarily coincide with the our bylaws that we have for the committee with the Met Council. So with that, I'll close and open to any questions you may have.
As I look at the new language and the old language, the old language is a couple lines shorter, but what is the essence of what you're doing? You're making more people available for this council? Or?
No, you are on 2751, Mr.
Yes.
Yes, basically what we're doing, and I took this off the Senate file, so I apologize for not having the correct lines, but if you go to where in the old one, where it's being deleted, to advise the council on management policies for the council's special transportation services, that is being deleted and being replaced by starting to advise the council on the development and management of policies regarding accessibility of all aspects of fixed regular route and special transportation services for persons with disability. The Transportation Accessibility Advisory Committee shall also advise the council on long-range plans to meet the accessible transportation needs of the disability community. And then this change also includes taking it out of the STS portion of the statute and moving it into the area of Met Council Advisory Committee.
Anybody else have any questions or comments? Anybody from the audience that would like to testify?
Mr. Chair, I forgot to mention there is no cost to this change. It's just language change.
You probably just passed your bill.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions or comments, audience or otherwise? If not, why, all in favor of, well, let's see, we need to restate the recommendation here, I guess, Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, members, I move that House File 2751 be referred to the General Register.
All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying yes or aye.
Yes.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, your bill is sent to the General Register, Representative Mason. I think you have another bill up right now as well, so if we're ready for that one, it's 2752.
You'll give us just a minute here. Mr. Chair, members, 2752 is about the design of the light rail transit vehicles. And
I move
that this.
You want to move it? Move your bill?
I'm going to move 2752 to Transportation Finance.
Okay, and now you have an amendment here. You'd like to.
If everybody has that, fine. Otherwise, we're going to do that on Thursday.
House file, what?
What?
H2752A1, if you have
it. We'll
that.
Do it today if I can get a copy, please. I would like to move the A1 amendment, please.
Anybody get their cell phones? Is anybody talking on their cell phones right now?
Mr. Chair, this is the work zone.
The microphone put on our testifier.
What's that one?
That's what picks up that.
Okay. Representative Mason, would you like to move your... amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move amendment to A1, please.
All in favor of that being attached to the bill, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right, you have your bill and one whole piece now. If you would like.
Thank you very much. I'm going to let our testifier give you the details of this bill. And if you would like to proceed, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margot Imdick Cross. I'm the accessibility specialist with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. And what this particular bill does is it adopts standards for future purchases of light rail transit vehicles so that there are dedicated wheelchair spaces for people to pull into and use, and that there are companion seats adjacent to those dedicated wheelchair spaces. It also asks that the Transportation Accessibility Advisory Committee, a bill which you just reviewed, advise on the accessibility standards. It, and I'm thinking as amended, I think that's about it, isn't it? Okay, I think that's the quick amended version. So again, the important aspect of the bill is the design standard. And if I can proceed with my testimony.
Please do.
Thank you. The first generation vehicles used on the Hiawatha LRT line provided two dedicated wheelchair seating areas that measured approximately 36 by 48 inches in each car. This dedicated space also provided two seats for companions who may be traveling with the wheelchair or scooter user. The second generation vehicles unfortunately eliminated both of these features. In its place, it provided fold-up seats, shared seating areas. And these shared seating areas, if full, forced the wheelchair or scooter user to sit in the aisle or in the entrance exit area. There, since there's no conductors or engineers or bus drivers to ask these individuals to move, it really became our responsibility to ask these folks, our individuals, to move. And so if we were uncomfortable doing so, again, we were left sitting in the aisle or the exit or the entrance. In regard to the, and not so long ago, it was my experience that the seating area was actually occupied by seniors. Individuals with crutches and canes and other mobility devices, and I wasn't about to ask them to move. So again, I blocked the aisle, sat in the aisle, and there was my seating arrangement. The new vehicles also eliminated the companion seating and forced individuals who may be traveling together to separate if the companions also needed to be seated. Young children, spouses, caregivers would end up sitting rows away from the individual in the chair or scooter. On an evening when my husband and I returned from shopping, the closest available seat for him was three rows away. Now, this wasn't a problem for us. That was fine. But if I had been medically fragile, or if I had been the responsible adult for a young child, this separation would not be advisable nor acceptable. Before you today is House File 2752 as amended. This compromise language will require the Met Council to adopt standards for design of LRT vehicles that increase access. Require all LRT vehicles ordered after January 1st, 2015 to conform to these new standards. Require the Transportation Accessibility Advisory Committee to review the standards. And that the minimum standards include, as they did in the Hiawatha line, two dedicated wheelchair seats and two adjacent or adjacent companion seating. It's our position that individuals who ride the LRT should expect to be able to sit reasonably, comfortably, without blocking exit entrances and without blocking aisles. And this is what our bill before you today does. Are there any questions?
Ms. Cross, I was wondering if the level of entry and exit from these are, if those are okay. I've seen some that, not here, but in other states where they're, you can roll right, if you're in a wheelchair, roll right in and out. Whereas I haven't looked at ours, so is that okay now?
Mr. Chair, not only are they level, but they're within 2 inches between the actual car and the station. So we've been very careful to keep a close eye on that. and the engineers are getting better every year. So, yes, they're very accessible.
Are you quoting from national standards when you do this, or is this Minnesota standards that you're establishing here?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. National standards do allow for these fold-up seats. They're the minimum standards, though. And even though they're providing more of these fold-up seats, they still reflect what the minimum standard is. And we're not comfortable with the minimum standard. As with so many other laws and regulations, we exceed minimum standards. And the dedicated wheelchair seating and the companion seating, once that was provided, it established a standard of access. And it's also our position and the position of many legal experts that you can't decrease accessibility once you've provided a particular standard of accessibility. And so that's also part of our argument.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the testifier in regards to the second generation cars. Were they out of ADA compliance, or is that just within the realm of ADA compliance to have just fold-up seats?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they were, in fact, ADA compliant. We're not accusing the Met Council of not being ADA compliant. But the fold-up seat is a shared seating area as opposed to a dedicated seating area. And the shared seating area, if occupied, I mean, two things have to happen before I, as a wheelchair user, can use that space. The seat has to be down, and the seat has to be up, and the seat has to be unoccupied. And so it now became my responsibility to ask people who were seated in that area to move, not knowing whether they were seated there because they had a disability or just because it was convenient for them. And so it became much more complicated, and the companion seating was gone. There was no place. For those of you who were here today and saw Allie running around, a little two-year-old, right? Her mom's in a wheelchair, her dad's in a wheelchair. And the closest place with this design, the closest place for Allie to sit is on the other side of the entrance exit. So right now, Allie's small enough that she can sit in mom or dad's lap. But in a couple of years, she's going to have to sit somewhere. And the closest place for her to sit. Now, what responsible parent in this room would even consider that, much less allow it to happen? And so, you know, and in the Met Council, I have to tell you, they came forth and they are amending this. They worked to amend this bill today, so we're real happy with the Met Council and with the amendment, and we think we can move forward if it is approved.
Sure. If I could just one follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question becomes, you know, there are going to be certain times when there could be standing room only in things, too. Just out of my own understanding, how does that help work with your current proposal?
Mr. Chair, represent all bets are off. Okay. You know, I've been to many Twins games, and you just pull in. Yeah, when you can even get in because they're so crowded, you just kind of, so all bets are off in Twins games.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions or comments from Representative Rundbeck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to ask, the language under Subdivision 2 must include but are not limited to, what other possible subjects might there be standards adopted for that would come under this bill? I mean, what? Do we know at this time what other?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rundbeck, I think one of the other issues that we were talking about was a signage issue that exceeded what current standards required. We would like to see, because one of the things that the Met Council has agreed to do is remove in the 57 that they've currently ordered that have all flip-up seats. They've agreed to remove one of those seats. And in that regard, we've asked that there be a wheelchair symbol somewhere there so people know that it's kind of priority seating for people in chairs or scooters. And that exceeds what? That would be an example of where that exceeds.
OK, Okay, thank you, ma'am. And Mr. Chair, we've taken off Section 2, which is this report, so I take it there is no report due to the Met Council. But does it have to come out of the title? I'm not sure how that works.
What is he talking about? Representative Ronda, point that out.
Page line 1.23, we've removed Section 2 in the amendment. Did we not? Page 1, delete Section 2, yes.
Do we want someone from the Met Council to address?
Mr. Burris, will you tell us what's going on here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, when a new engrossment is produced, the Revisor of Statutes Office typically takes a look at the title and has editorial discretion to amend the title if the amendment doesn't already direct title changes. So I think it's a reasonable expectation that the requiring report piece would be pulled out of the title as part of the engrossment.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else? Anybody else would like to testify on this in or out of the audience here? Well, I don't see anybody. Would you like to renew your... Oh, Mr. Shetner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Met Council. And I will be brief, but I will follow up on the comments that the Council has agreed, does agree with this bill. We appreciate the amendment, but we also agree that there needs to be some adjustment made to our light rail vehicles, and that we've been working with Margo and folks from the State Council on Disability and with Mr. Biss from the TAC Committee, and we will be in the process of making those adjustments here over the course of the next year and when we procure any additional vehicles for any future rail lines. So I just want the committee to know that the Council stands in support of this bill. We also support House File 2751 that Mr. Biss was up here speaking to, but with that, I'll end my comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair, members, I'd like to again ask that you refer House File 2752 to Transportation Finance. Thank you.
As amended, I think. Huh? As amended.
As amended.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to go to the, what? Oh, the vote. You want to vote. Always you want to vote. All in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You're going to the Committee on Transportation Finance. Five, six, seven, eight. How did you know, Representative Norton, that we're going to call on you next?
Could read minds, Mr. Chair.
Okay. This is House File. I would recommend that House File 3059 be referred as it will be amended to the Committee on Health and Human Services, Finance. And we then need to attach your amendment, which is H3059AT. I would move that. Be quiet.
It's my best testifier.
Oh,
exactly.
My
best testifier.
All in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right. Where have we got the bill?
Are you ready for me, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
Members, you have before you a bill that has been in the works for a number of years. The legislative auditor, a number of years ago, took a look at our non-emergency medical transportation process in the state and raised a number of concerns. At that time, a bill was written to put in place a committee to study this issue. We made some progress last year, but the committee has continued now. This is the second full year, and we have before you, I think I can safely say, a bill that we are all standing behind. And this has been a task force that's had folks from departments and various providers, and Sue Abderholden was our fearless chair, and it's been long and difficult to get where we are today. A couple of things are going to happen in this bill, and then I'll just let Sue take the helm. But this is a non-emergency medical transportation. We have a layered series of STS, Special Transportation Services, and ATS, Access Transportation Services. We are going to combine those, this is going to take a number of years to completely unfold, and Sue will explain that a little further. But we're going to describe types of transportation now by the modes of transportation as opposed to just those two titles. We are attempting, through a lot of work, we have built a script when people are identified as needing services to help get them in the most appropriate transportation according to federal and state law. And we are hoping to, we've increased the amount that a volunteer can get paid for providing transportation. Mileage reimbursement, and are going to encourage public transportation in a way that we haven't done before. Our state of Minnesota has far less people using public transportation than other states that we looked into, and so we're going to try to remedy that, and in the hopes that by doing so we can afford to fund a little bit more generously the mileage for our providers that are providing this service. So we want to assure safe vehicles through inspections and certification, and we have the amendment before you, which I almost called you Representative Abderholden, but I don't think she'd want that right now, that Sue Abderholden is going to explain a little bit. We have addressed the concerns by the Department of Transportation with this amendment, and I'll let her talk a little bit more about the details, and then you can ask questions, and I'll make sure she answers them.
Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and the co-chair of this advisory committee. I do want to just point out that this has been a very, very, very difficult road. Of all the task forces I have chaired in the last 30 years, this has been the most difficult. And I say that to encourage you not to change any of the wording. it was really hard to bring everyone together and to agree to this. The amendment that you have, and I think Representative Norton really kind of explained the components of the bill, really going to one administrative structure, making sure people get the right level of care, keeping the committee going forward, and really addressing actually many of the concerns laid out in the legislative auditor's report. One of the things we realized is that since we're making all the providers meet the same standards, is that we have no idea how many of the providers who are not currently kind of licensed would come forward. We just have no idea. So we thought it made more sense to say that for at least you know, a year, that providers who would need to be newly meet the standards would actually request a waiver from the Department of Human Services. And then we would, and they would give them the waiver. And then we'd know actually how many people there are. And then we could come back and working with the Department of Transportation say, okay, there's going to be, you know, 100 providers. This is the fee that would need to be assessed in order for us to actually certify them. Instead of just picking some wild number out of the air, we thought that that actually made more sense to do that. And then the department would also come back to say, do we need to change the rules in any way now that we have these new vehicles being part of this process? So I think it was actually a pretty good idea in terms of getting actual data to know what you're basing your decisions on. And so the Department of Transportation will come back next year. I think really this is actually a really good bill. We had many concerns as representing people with serious mental illnesses in terms of how people were assessed for the mode of transportation, and we really have addressed many of those things. So, again, there is peace in the valley, which has been hard to get, and I would certainly encourage you to support this bill.
What is the another name for non-emergency medical transportation? Is there a name for the company that services this? Am I thinking about the Metro Mobility or?
Mr. Chairman, actually, it's a number of companies that provide this service, and then there are people who arrange for the rides as well.
As if, am I suggesting that that's one of the providers for this, or no?
Metro Mobility.
No. Can you give me the name of a company that does this?
In Rochester, Mr. Chair, it would be called RNS Transport. I think there are many companies in the Twin Cities area that do it, and I don't know if MESA, I believe, is one. There's just a myriad. I saw one recently that, you know, was like Amy's Transportation Service. I just think there are a myriad of them out there.
Are they dial-up, or what are they? I am not familiar with this term, so that's what I'm asking.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Abderholman may want to clarify, but we have a system in the state where folks who qualify for medical assistance are entitled by federal law to have a ride to their doctor's appointment. So non-emergency medical transportation will pick these folks up and take them to their appointments and back home. A number of issues arose, partly with the brokering of the rides, issues of what's called no-load miles. If you live out in rural Minnesota, there was a period where for the first 5 miles you didn't get paid for the first 5 miles. You only got paid if there was a client in the vehicle with you, but once you dropped them off and had to drive another 30 miles back for your next ride, you got no reimbursement. These are all the issues we've been dealing with. And they're different in the Twin Cities, frankly, than they are in rural Minnesota. So it's a very complicated issue, but the whole concept is to fulfill the federal law that allows these folks to get to their appointments and back home.
Where I'm just trying to find out about this. So, Mr. Beard, you have to wait a minute.
Fine with me. Maybe my questions will be answered.
Is this... Who runs this system?
I have.
Mr. Chairman, there's actually, so there's been two systems. So there used to be ATS, so that would be where people don't need, you know, much assistance. Either you could have a volunteer driver, especially in rural Minnesota, they use that. You could get a token to use public transportation. If you needed more assistance, for example, if you had cognitive problems and couldn't transfer more than, like, once, then you could get, you know, a cab or something of that sort. And if you needed specialized transportation, maybe you needed a vehicle that had a wheelchair lift in it, or depending on your condition, maybe you needed a stretcher, a vehicle that would allow you to lay prone. So it's a range of different vehicles. And actually, ATS was done through the counties, and STS was done through the state. And so one of the recommendations of the Office of Legislative Auditor was to create one system to make it easier for people to move back and forth.
How do you interface or are separate from or something in Metro Mobility? Because I think they do the same thing, but I may be wrong.
Mr. Chair, some of it is that there
that's
is
the name in the Metro anyway. You know, so.
But that is certainly one mode of transportation. And what the program we're talking about are people that specifically qualify for a particular service based on their MA. There are other transportation, public systems, private systems that are out there for other people who don't qualify for medical assistance. So there are a myriad of services, some of which you heard about earlier from the testifiers, and I heard one of them reference special transportation, which would be this system.
Okay. Representative Beard?
Well, Mr. Chairman, they're getting at the thrust of my question. My question was going to be designed to allow them to illuminate us a little further on the difficulties of putting this together. Mr. Abderholton, if you've got peace in the valley and you managed to pull this together over a period of years, first of all, members, I would say this is one of those innumerable reports we asked for that actually had an outcome. Where we're actually taking action on it. Sometimes it doesn't happen in the next session. It happens years later. Thank you for your work on this. I'm going to be really reluctant to let anybody pull it apart if you've done all this. My question was going to be, when you mentioned how hard this was and how much angst people were in, how difficult it was to get them to agree, I was going to ask you to illuminate us a little more on that. You've been doing that by answering the chairman's questions to an extent. But I'm thinking if you could just maybe describe just a little further, besides the fact that there's a county system and a state system, I'm sure that there are people that are doing this for their business or their livelihood, turning their ministry, if you will, into a business. Are we continuing to protect the private folks that are involved in this in this new system that's being proposed, or is this all going to become a government-run system? Can you talk about that?
And Mr. Chair, I'll start and then Sue can take over. I would say one of the struggles that we've had from the very beginning, Mr. Chair and members, is that for a time there was a statewide broker who did all the brokering of certain types of rides. And what we found is that it was picking winners and losers, sometimes among the providers in an area. The providers would prefer clients to determine which service they would like to use rather than just be sent someone, maybe someone different every time they go. When you have a trusted provider and you like the service you're getting, you want to be able to continue to use that. So that was really one of the kind of, you know, premier pieces to what we were doing, is how can we be client focused, let them choose the provider that they qualify for. There will still be a level of need determination, and they will only qualify for a certain level of ride, whether it be a Lyft or whether it be a cab or a bus, whatever. But should they be designated to receive a wheelchair lift, they can choose the company that services their area that they like, and that we were trying to protect that. So that was just one of the many issues that we have been trying to deal with through this process, and Ms. Abderholden can name many others.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would add the other one is that to try to move to a single administrative structure, we had to choose, is it going to be the state or the county? And we decided to go with the county. This only impacts fee for service, and they were already doing what we used to call the ATS. But the problem is that for those STS providers, and now instead of submitting their bills directly to the state, they were going to have to submit them to the county, and sometimes there would be more than one that they would service. So we have actually postponed the implementation for 2 years so that we can create, like we have down in Carver County, kind of a smart link system where you can do this automatically, and so we want to develop that for the whole state. Now, it could be, there's a number of systems out there, we're not picking that particular system right now, but something like that. So we were really trying to accommodate, frankly, the small business people who run these companies, but also make it easier for the client so that they don't have to figure out, do I call the state, do I call the county, if my needs change, who do I call? So we really worked very hard on trying to figure out how to make that work.
Mr. Chair, just a concluding comment, not that I'm bragging about Scott and Carver County, because they bring it up until fellow members on the committee are ready to throw something at me, but I remember the SmartLink discussion of a few years ago, Sue, and how Scott and Carver got together and actually increased the service and lowered the cost per ride by doing that. So if you're if you have them on board, this member is ready to vote aye on your bill. So thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I would just follow up, if you would let me, to say we had a presentation, and the committee was ready to go 100% to that system, and we're told we're not quite ready to spread it statewide, but that is definitely of interest to the committee and the providers.
Representative Rundbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this bill, as it goes forward, the plan, is it revenue neutral then?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
I wish it was. We have tried, and our hope had been, and we're still waiting on the fiscal note, our hope had been that because we were going to have less people getting the rides and that we could raise the rates, but really making sure folks have tokens, increasing the volunteer mileage and personal mileage and those sorts of things do cost. The rumor kind of in the street is that it might be between $8 and $12 million to do this, and it will have to be dealt with in the Health and Human Service Committee and in their finance bill, which I will amend it on Thursday, and they're all a little nervous about that. But as we've said, 2 years in the making, this is something we really have to figure out how to do and how to do right.
And Mr. Chair Ms. Abderholden, if there are, you talk about volunteer services. If there are private organizations, groups, whatever, that want to do something in their county on a volunteer basis, does this in any way inhibit their ability to start something up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rumbach, absolutely not. I think it encourages it because we really, one of the things we looked at, especially for volunteers, is the no-load miles, especially in rural Minnesota. So they're driving and dropping someone off and driving an hour back home, you know, and that's a lot. We are also, though, leaving it up to the volunteer to decide whether they want to take that additional rate or not. You can't actually pay for the no-load miles, so you actually have to pay them more per mile. It's a federal issue, unfortunately. But volunteers have to count as income any money above what that volunteer mileage rate is that's determined by the IRS. So some people might say, forget it, I don't want to do that, but others might want to take it. So we're leaving that as an option for the volunteer drivers.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Representative Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Thornton and Sue, thanks for working on this. I actually work at a mental health center and I work specifically with clients with serious and persistent mental illness. And before we had these rides provided, our no-show rate for that subgroup of clientele was about 40%. When these rides were starting to be provided, that was cut in half. So people are showing up. People are getting better, and there were a lot of problems, and I'm glad to see them addressed, and so this is good work. So thanks for keeping this program not only live, but better. So.
Thank you.
Anybody else that would like to testify for or against in the audience? You know, I would recommend that House File 3059 be re-referred as amended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The same sign. Your bill is passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
What? Yeah. Representative Bernardi, are you here? I think you are. What's your bill number? 3084. I see it. Ooh, this is a fat bill. Well, Representative Bernardi, I would recommend that House File 3084 be re-referred as it will be amended to the Committee on Transportation Finance. So that means that I will also move House File Amendment House File 308 dash 4A1. No, just 4A1. Are you ready? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Your bill is whole and you may proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a question. Do we have a bill summary? Sorry, I don't find the summaries today.
Oh, it's just the
inception. I don't know. No, we do not. Just flip to it. It's only about 30 pages long. So. I am wondering, I have two amendments here, too.
Mr. Chair, we're just going to do the one that A1 amendment.
A1 is right. The one. Okay, that's the one I just...
Yep.
So we have that on there, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I have before you House File 3084, and this is one of the unsessioned bills that the Department of Transportation has combed through their
that's the reason.
Their statutes to come up with laws that have unnecessary, redundant, obsolete provisions, eliminated and modernized, and conforming changes have been made. And with me today is Eric Rudin, and he's going to walk through them. I give you an overview, actually, of them. I've gone through them in detail to make sure that I thought that they were exactly that. So anyway, with that today, Rudin will provide testimony from MnDOT.
Mr. Rudin,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I'll walk through the more significant portions of the bill. There are numerous repealers that we believe just fall into that obsolete category, and I won't walk through those one by one unless there are questions, but there are some other changes as well that I'll cover. So Section 1 of the bill changes a reporting requirement for projects that receive state bond funds. It exempts state aid projects that are valued at less than $5 million from that reporting requirement. This has been somewhat of an administrative burden for local governments, especially for some very small projects such as a township bridge replacement. Section 2 of the bill exempts passenger rail projects from some additional review requirements. You can see on lines 3.4 to 3.14 that there are numerous other projects that are already exempt from these requirements, including highway rest areas, truck stations, light rail lines, and so we're just adding passenger rail projects to that exemption. Sections 3 and 4, we believe, are obsolete, so I won't go through those in detail. Section 5 of the bill is a reporting requirement. I should say that there are several reporting requirements that we're proposing to eliminate or change. This was one of the directives for the unsession bill, was to try to reduce the number of reports that are required to be submitted to the legislature. And so Section 5 is a report on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds that were available from the federal government. Most of those funds have already been expended, but there are some. There is a small amount of funds still remaining. Sections 6 and 7 of the bill relate to payments from the municipal and county state aid funds. We believe that fund forecasting has gotten better to the point where we can provide information to cities and counties much earlier on how much money they will be receiving from these funds. Section 8 is related to a repeal of Transportation Revolving Loan Fund. That's just a cross-reference. Section 9 deletes a reference to bridge clearance on the Minnesota River. The geometric requirements for bridges crossing these waterways are established by the Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Coast Guard. Section 10 is a cross-reference to Star City signs, and those signs are being eliminated elsewhere in the bill. Section 11 is another reporting requirement. These are for special revenue fund agreements that are in excess of $100,000, and we're proposing to eliminate that reporting requirement. Section 12 allows all MnDOT reports to the legislature to be submitted electronically so that we will no longer have to submit any paper copies. Section 13, we believe, is obsolete. Section 14 eliminates a report on the special transportation services, which we heard a little bit about in the last bill. There was a reporting requirement on complaints that were received in that program. Section 15 of the bill changes the Safe Routes to School report to a biennial report rather than an annual report. Section 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 we believe are obsolete, and Section 21 deletes a requirement that the department report on carrying construction appropriations across fiscal years. Interestingly enough, this report was not submitted for several years, and nobody seemed to mind that it was not submitted. So, Section 22 of the bill contains numerous repealers, and again, I won't go through those individually unless there are any questions, but I would draw your attention to a couple of reporting requirements that are being eliminated. One in 161.3428, this is an annual report on the design build program. MnDOT would still be required under separate language that's not being repealed to notify the legislature every time design build is used on a project. And the information in that annual report was completely duplicative of that notice, and so we think that the report is unnecessary. And then 174.93 subdivision 2 is another reporting requirement that we're proposing to eliminate. This is the fixed guideway report, which we believe is duplicative of information that's available elsewhere.
We take some, just as well as we go along here, I think. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudin, that one in particular strikes quite a sensitive area with me. I worked very hard when I chaired this committee to make sure that report was put in there. And now, just a year and a half later, we're asking to strike it. Tell me where the future legislatures are going to get the report on, the full report on what the costs and ongoing subsidies are going to be if we strike this 174.93. You just mentioned that you thought it was taken care of somewhere else. Where else is it taken care of?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, it's my understanding that CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board, has this information available for transit projects that they're planning or that are underway, under development. And so the Met Council believe that this report was somewhat duplicative of the information that would be available from CTIB.
Representative Beard?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was exactly the point of that. Was that not only would MnDOT, because MnDOT's expected to throw, the state is expected to throw in 10% of the cost of any of these projects, but that report would be required of any agency that was promoting passenger rail or any kind of fixed guideway system, whether it's bus or rail, with their ongoing subsidies and identifying the source and about what they thought that would meet. Mr. Chairman, when Mr. Rudin is done with his presentation, I intend to move the A2 amendment and preserve the work that we did, and that was the bipartisan support we had in the budget compromise of the summer of 2011, I think it was, I'm trying to remember, and one that I'd like to strenuously argue to keep in, but I'll move that amendment at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Mr. Rudin?
Actually, Mr. Chair, those were the specific issues that I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee. Again, the other repeals that are in the bill, we believe, are obsolete or redundant and are really just cleaning up the statutes. So unless there are specific questions about any of those, I don't think it's probably necessary to walk through those one by one.
So we're back here. Okay. I was in consultation with my person on my left here. What were you about? You were asking a question. You were.
No, Mr. Chair, I was just saying that the other provisions in the bill we believe are obsolete or redundant or unnecessary to leave in the statute. I don't believe there are terribly substantive provisions elsewhere in the bill that I should necessarily draw to your attention unless there are questions about any of them.
Are there any other questions? No, I don't see any. We're going to have a question over here. I'm just trying to figure out who did whom to what with this amendment. So just 1 second. This was suggested. This is. Yeah. Okay, what does it do? What? Well, we're ready for more questions, comments, or an amendment if you choose.
I'm ready.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A2 amendment, I'd like to move the A2 amendment and encourage its adoption. If I can speak to it, I may.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things we've gotten into over the years is fixed guideways that are popping up all over the place with the participation of every taxpayer in the state, not just the Met Council. Even if it was just a metropolitan area, having the taxpayers from all over the state come to town to pay our sales tax to help pay for them, whether they ride them or not, so on and so forth, that's a larger discussion. But the report that's being requested just strikes me as a wise and prudent thing to do, to give the mileposts on where we are with the projects that are in planning, in study. You know, one of the things that we complain about here sometimes is, gee, all of a sudden somebody's asking for more money for another rail project. Where did that come from? This helps everybody in the legislature pay attention to the fact that there are fixed guideway projects, rail projects, we'll just call them rail projects, all over the metro area that are in various stages of development, jumping through certain gates or hoops. I think there's 9 of them in every FTA process. And as they move along, before they get to like station number 6 or 7, I'm not sure which one, whenever people are standing in front of this committee asking for a bonding match to help the funding from the federal government come through, I want to be sure, and part of the impetus for this was that every legislator be aware that there are several of these projects moving through the process, and that's what the intent of the report is. It doesn't stop or slow anything down. It does shine light on the process of all these rail lines that are being proposed and keep every legislator in the loop that they are coming and that someday somebody's going to be standing in front of this, in front of the Finance Committee to be precise, asking for the state match to keep the FTA money flowing. So I think it's very important. This is a good government portion of law that was worked on a couple of years ago, and we got it in the summer of 2011 in the Grand Compromise on the Transportation Finance Bill. And it would be a shame, in my opinion, if we took that out now just because we could. I don't think it's duplicative. I don't think it's obsolete. In fact, I would submit to you it's more timely than it's ever been. So I'd urge adoption of the A2 amendment.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other day in Transportation Finance, Representative Beard tepidly supported one of my amendments, so I'm going to tepidly support his amendment. And I'll tell you why I agreed with all you said. And you know, my concern with this and I agree that it's not obsolete. That's the criteria we're working on, not so much the philosophical discussion about transit versus road funding. And so that's the criteria I'm using. But the reason I had concerns about this when it first came up, I think Representative Holberg put this forward a few years ago, as I recall, and there was bipartisan support. I wasn't one of the Democrats that supported it for one reason. I agree that there should be scrutiny of these projects, transitways, et cetera, but we didn't provide the same scrutiny for all the money we're spending on road projects. So that was my concern then. Mm-hmm. That's not the issue before us now. But I do hope that moving forward we can provide the same kind of scrutiny. This is transportation as a whole. I don't think we should just pick on one mode over the other. And I think there's some mythology that we overspend on transit and underspend on roads. But that's not for today. And so I'm going to support the Beard Amendment because the criteria here is whether this is obsolete, and it's not. But I do feel that we missed the mark when we first did this and exempting roads from the study as well. So I will. I'll support your amendment, Representative Beard.
Is there other comments or suggestions or whatever? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Chair Earhart. I also want to want to let you know that I consider this a friendly amendment. I actually had this drafted, and I wanted to talk to Representative Beard about it because I was told that it was duplicative and that it was provided somewhere else. And so I had it in this packet and then would offer it the next one if I did find out that it was important. So I'm glad that he shared that with me, and I consider it a friendly.
All in favor of the Beard Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. We have that adopted. Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. These repealers that have to do with the revolving street loan accounts, CASA and MSA, what are we doing there?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rumbeck, this is authority that has existed since 1997, and cities and counties have the ability to transfer a portion of their state aid funds into these transportation revolving loan fund accounts. They have never done so since 1997, and they have to actually take an action every year, basically refusing to transfer any money into those accounts, so it's a bit of an administrative hassle for them to go through that step, and so we're just proposing to delete the accounts.
Are we ready for a vote? All right. All right. Oh, Representative Beard, you have a...
Mr. Chair, I just can't help myself. On 18R, Mr. Rudin, there's a selection of swamplands section. I'm glad to see we're deleting that, but I'm intrigued to know how in the world the government was interested in certifying swamplands. I think we'd have to rename them wetlands. I think that's the appropriate name today. But anyhow, swamplands are the concern of the state about railroads running through swamplands is apparently something we're not going to pay attention to anymore. I just want you to know I'm going to campaign on that in my next campaign ever. Glad to see we're deleting that.
All in favor of... I recommend that House File 3084 be referred as amended to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed, same sign? Okay, Representative Bernardi. Thank you.
Thank you, Committee and the Chair.
Yeah, is Representative Ward here? Good.
I knew you would agree.
What's his bill number? 1981. Huh. What?
Mr. Chair, members.
I'm going to move your bill, Representative Ward. I move it for consideration. And I think we have an amendment, so I will move House File 1981A1. Author's amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oh, same sign. Representative Ward, you are on deck. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. And this is a bill about snow removal. And simply, I just think we need to get rid of all the snow in the state of Minnesota right now.
Aye. Aye.
So, Mr. Chair, members, I'm joined at the testifying table today with... by Ann Finn from the League of Minnesota Cities. House File 1981, members, is something you talked about in this committee last year as well. It's a repeal of the sunset authorizing snow removal in uncompleted subdivisions. This was requested by the League of Minnesota Cities on behalf of the City of Jenkins, a city in my district. Members, it repeals the sunset on enabling language that allows cities to provide snow removal service and partially developed the subdivisions. And here's how the history has been. The legislature passed this bill in 2009 when, due to the economic conditions, a number of cities began dealing with abandoned partial developments with some parcels occupied. In many cases, the developer had gone bankrupt before turning the streets in the development over to the city. Without the provision, the residents within the development would be faced with contracting independently for snow removal on their streets or risk being inaccessible to such things as public safety vehicles, school buses, garbage trucks, emergency medical services, those type of vehicles. So when the bill was passed in 2009, its author agreed to a sunset of 2013 just to see if any problems arose from the legislation. In 2013, last year, members, the legislation, because it sunsetted last year, was supposed to sunset last year, the legislature reauthorized a one-year extension of the sunset so that discussion of the repeal could occur in 2014. And members were here to talk about the repeal of this provision. So some cities, such as the City of Jenkins, are using this authority and would like to continue to do so. Members, I conclude by saying... the League of Minnesota Cities has not been made aware of any problems that has occurred over the last 4 years. This authority has been in effect and likewise is not aware of any opposition to the bill. And I do have a letter, I don't think we got it in your folders though, from the City of Jenkins. Clerk, did you get that? Yeah. Okay, thank you. So obviously, members, bless you. They're very much in support. They're very much in support of this legislation moving forward. Stand for any questions, members.
Didn't we do this last year?
Mr. Chair, this is we did extend the repeal out one more year, so it's up right now. And so that's why we're here to ask for the total removal of the repeal, allowing cities like the city of Jenkins and other cities around the state of Minnesota to snowplow the streets that have been left abandoned and uncompleted divisions, so the city citizens in those cities and those areas can get the services that are so much needed.
Are there any questions or comments for Representative Ward? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, I'd like to see more of the snow leave too, so I'm good there. Question in regards to abandonment of developments. This is just one aspect of it, isn't it, in regards to snow removal? I mean, aren't there other issues that are having to deal with it too? And are there any issues in regards to the owners of those on those particular streets with the cost factor?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and certainly we've heard of all kinds of issues that have developed as a result of abandoned, partially developed subdivisions. Things ranging from homes that, you know, have had their water turned off, other kinds of maintenance issues. This is one that came to us as kind of a public safety and transportation issue, and that's why we're dealing with it here.
Okay. And what about price?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, the city in this legislation is authorized to assess the properties that receive the service. I understand that in the city of Jenkins, the most that it would cost a property owner in a one-year time period would be $300.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Anybody else who would like to testify about this bill? If not, I will move that I recommend that House File 1981 be referred as amended to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Bye.
No more snow.
Am I next?
Sure.
Where's my bill? What's my bill number?
2299.
Okay. You don't have
any. No, I think it's a bill.
I have right here.
Another Mason bill? Mm-hmm. Understand.
I have to go out there? Go
ahead.
Okay.
Did we do the Earhart bill? No. We did both Mason bills? We did all three Mason bills?
I thought there was only two.
One, two, three.
Where is that, remember? I don't think so. What? I don't have it. Oh, it's
Representative Earhart, would you like to move the bill?
I will move House File 2995. And I also have an amendment, Madam Chair. House File is House H2995A1.
Is there any discussion on this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Your bill is in order.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. What this bill does, it expands who can authorize a vehicle to be towed from public property to include fire department officers and state and local authorities, in addition to police and parking enforcement officers who are authorized under current law. Removes the requirement on issuing a parking citation and completing a towing report prior to performing the tow, and three, requires towing authorities to confirm accept receipt of a tow authorization and having performed the tow through a written response. And I have for testimony Mr. Lance Klatt. Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station and Convenience Store Association. I got that right?
Welcome to the committee, and if you'll identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lance Klatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association and also representing the Minnesota Service Station and Convenience Store Association.
I missed part of your title. I'm sorry.
The reason why we're here today is an issue came up to our attention just in the past couple of weeks that will be addressed through this proposed legislation if it is received, if it receives the committee support. It is not controversial in any way, but will simply bring the towing statute up to date with how towing practices occur when towing companies receive requests from law enforcement and public agencies. Oftentimes, when towing issues are involved, legal aid has an interest in these types of issues. The MPTA, the Towing Association, has spoken to Mr. Ron Elwood of Legal Aid about this issue and a need for this bill, and Legal Aid has no problem or objections with this proposal. With current law in Minnesota Statute 168B.035 Subdivision 2 contains a requirement that a towing authority may not tow a motor vehicle from a public property unless a peace officer has prepared in addition to a parking citation, written towing report describing the motor vehicle, and reasons for the towing. The report must be signed by the officer and the tow driver. The statute does not otherwise define towing report. The penalty for not following the statute is in Subdivision 6, which allows the owner or driver of the vehicle to recover from the towing authority the greater of $100 or two times the actual damages sustained as a result of the violation, which also includes the cost of recovering the vehicle and time spent and transportation costs. Here's the problem. With technology, law enforcement agencies have largely gone to paperless, so towing companies are primarily receiving the tow orders either by email or verbally by phone. The towing company usually responds by email. There's no towing report to actually sign. A simple change to the statute could remedy this problem, and that is what is proposed in Chairman Earhart's bill, House File 2995. This bill simply states after a tow has been requested by the public authorities, the request be confirmed by the towing company so that a paper trail exists concerning the requested tow. This bill clarifies that no towing report or actual signatures will now be required so that the current law will reflect actual practices in the industry. At this time, we appreciate your support of Chairman Earhart's bill, House File 2995. I will stand by for questions if you have any.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifier as well. I'm glad you have great optimism that towing bills are not controversial. But my question comes to if I guess something, they didn't like that one. I guess question becomes: so if you don't get the verbal or written confirmation, what do you do with the vehicle,
Mr. Chair, Representative? How it really works a lot of times is that, let's say if there's a snow, we get 8 inches of snow, and a trooper, most cases have tow reports, but local law enforcement or other agency, sometimes the only way that we know to come out and to tow that vehicle is by the request of a peace officer in general. If this, when that request comes, either it can be verbally. And otherwise, if it's not verbal or via email or requested, we will not go out to tow the vehicle. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Okay, so what you're saying is that before you actually tow it, you have to get authorization.
That is correct.
Okay. Because I know one of... I'm sorry.
Representative Peters.
Madam Chair, because I know that one of the more angry calls that we get is when cars being towed and people don't think it should be towed, and so I just want to make sure that we cover all of the due process that's necessary for that, because it's not a cheap towing bill, and the people that get their car towed are oftentimes upset and think that they're in the right. So I appreciate anything that we can do to make sure that the due process is maintained.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you very much. And we do not like that practice either as far as towing vehicles without being authorized to. It gives our industry a bad name, and we are here to be professional. And as we all know, nobody likes their vehicles towed. We like to do those services when they're requested upon us to do so. Thank you.
May I ask a question? You're talking just about a police officer, State Patrol, doing this. What happens, how would you know if the actual owner of the car had selected someone to come and do a towing as well?
Madam Chair, that is done by a private matter of the customer calling the towing operator themselves, not through any peace officer or agency.
But you would, I guess, what I'm trying to arrive at, is it possible that both of these people could be calling for a tow? And I'm assuming that if I'm calling for a tow, I'm going to try to get somebody that's probably cheaper than the State Patrol, just needs to get the vehicle out of the way.
Madam Chair, that is up to the discretion of the consumer, and I see where you're going with this, is if the State Patrol already makes a call to the towing operator and the consumer does as well, I believe at that point in time it's up to the consumer to decide on who he or she would like to tow their vehicle.
Okay, but it doesn't stop. But it doesn't prevent two calls being made. There doesn't seem to, all you're talking about here is that the teller that the State Patrol calls you have to have something in writing from that.
Correct.
But they don't have to tell the owner of the car that they're doing it.
Madam Chair, where this statute will help is that when local law enforcement agencies or peace officers make that call. We haven't had a lot of issues with the consumers or doubling up on phone calls. This is to create a paper trail so that when, let's say that individual did make a call and the peace officer also made the call, now we have proof of performance that call came to our towing operators, and therefore we feel that this is more on a burden on our towing operators to make sure they send out a written or email request to the agency or even to the individual who did request the tow. It puts the omen more on us towing operators to make sure we're following the law correctly.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Are there any questions or comments from the audience? Would Representative Earhart like to move his... Oh, I apologize, Representative Rosenthal.
Hi, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, this is a quick question. This happened to me, and it's not fun. When you dispatch a tow truck to a vehicle, do you take into account whether it's all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive?
Madam Chair, Representative, that does not... I don't think that really is part of the decision-making when you're towing a vehicle. I think they don't know... They may know what the vehicle's a two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive vehicle when they get out to the scene itself. And at that point in time, to properly tow a vehicle... you will know at that point the right way to tow it, due to the fact if it's front-wheel drive, you tow it from the front, and then it's four-wheel drive, you hope it's not locked in the front, and you could tow it from the rear.
So if it's marked all-wheel drive, there'll be something under each wheel?
Correct.
Okay. I'm assuming, Madam Chair, I can review my motion.
Please.
I recommend that House File 2995 be referred as amended to the General Register.
Okay.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes.
We have one more or two more? Oh, we have one more bill, and then we have to get out of here, so. Where are we? Yeah. Representative Mason. Uh-huh.
It's the Sandy Mason Show.
338. Hang on to this because I have to talk about it again. 3035? 3038. Okay. Representative Mason, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to refer House File 3038 to the General Register.
Okay, go ahead.
And this bill, it's an agency bill, and it does a little bit of streamlining, and hopefully cuts down on cost. It deals with contracts, and I'm going to let Eric Radin give you the details.
Mr. Radin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill amend statute to remove the current one-mile limitation on doing highway construction in an adjoining state or allowing an adjoining state to do highway construction within Minnesota. The adjoining state will still pay for the work that's done in their state, but it's often more cost-effective to let one contract for the work rather than each state letting a separate contract. And a couple years ago, MnDOT had to come to the legislature to get an exemption for a specific project on Highway 60 in southwest Minnesota where MnDOT oversaw work that was done within the state of Iowa. So this will allow us some flexibility without having to come back to the legislature for a special exemption for each project. Section 3 of the bill adds natural phenomena and man-made disasters to the exception that allows a one-week advertisement for bids. And it adds a provision that allows work to prevent damage rather than the current system where the damage has to actually occur first. And it deletes a requirement to remove, deletes a requirement to mail advertisements for these types of contracts because MnDOT now does all of its bid advertising on the web. And then section 4 of the bill provides that the state is not responsible for making payments on bonds that have been issued by a city if the population of that city falls below 5,000. The Minnesota Constitution restricts municipal state aid street payments to cities of 5,000 and above. And we did have a situation after the last census where a city fell below that threshold and had some of these outstanding bonds. So we would like this language just to clarify that the state is not responsible for continuing to make those payments. I should let you know, though, that the city that was an issue for has since gone back above 5,000 in population, so that's no longer an issue for them. And there are also other tools that cities can use to finance their road projects. And so, Mr. Chair, that's a very brief overview of the bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Reinbeck.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Radin. Yeah, the city is Circle Pines, and this, you know, language, though, would appear to, you know, be in conflict with what was decided in the bill 2 years ago, which was that cities that had reached 5,000 could be deemed to remain at 5,000 in spite of loss because of, the recession and so on. And so I'm not sure if we were the only ones to let bonds at that point or not, but we have 10-year bonds that go up to 2024. So conceivably, if for some reason the city falls below 5,000 in the year 2020, which I don't know that it would, but you know, it's problematic, and you probably have cities just on the cusp of 5,000 for whom there it may be more difficult to get bonding, just because of it, you know, it kind of places the whole thing in question. So, so these bonds would come at a higher cost. It seems to me that, and then you still have the issue of Chisholm, don't you, which has been grandfathered. It never even did reach 5,000. I mean, I think that somehow or other, what applies to other small cities should apply to Chisholm. So, I would hope we would not, you know, make this a part of the bill. And maybe you need to clarify something, but at least for cities that had acted in good faith on that bill 2 years ago, that this would not apply to them.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rumbeck, to my knowledge, the city of Circle Pines was the only one that had issued these bonds that fell below 5,000. There were a few other cities that did fall below 5,000, but that was the only city who had issued bonds under this authority. It's my understanding that the city of Chisholm is now back over 5,000. I'm getting a nod from somebody from our state aid office in the back. And I think that kind of what you were saying is kind of the point of this language, that if the city is, for example, below 6,000 and they know their population is declining or potentially declining, that they need to think very carefully about selling these bonds. And so that's what the language in the bill is intended to do, is to give some guidance to those cities as well as to the bond houses that, this could be an issue after every federal census. As far as Circle Pines, though, If they did fall below 5,000 at the next census, what the legislature did last year was allow a five-year phasing out period, and so they would continue to receive state aid funds for 5 years after that federal census, and so by that time their bonds would be paid off.
That's helpful. Okay. And maybe, you know, I will want to have conversation with them, and hopefully I can have conversation with you, and if that isn't their understanding.
Definitely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll just keep it brief because I'm also in the same section, a little concerned about a community that is at close to 5,000, and you really need the development in order to stay above 5,000. And what you're telling them is, A, you better not, because you may not have the funds later, because we may pull out of our obligation that we said as a state to you when you were above 5,000. It seems a little disingenuous to have us help with a particular program, knowing that later on that you could pull out. So I also think, you know, I certainly don't have a problem with us saying up front, hey, you're under 5,000, you don't qualify, and that's constitutionally. But if the bonds were let during that time, I think we have an obligation as well. So I just pass it on for my concern.
Any other questions or comments? Anyone else would like to testify for or against? If not, would you like to renew your motion, Representative Mason?
Yes. Chair, members, I would like to recommend House File 3038 be referred to the General Register.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
By the way, General Register, we will not be having a meeting tomorrow. And we don't know when we will, but keep tuned, and we're adjourned.
Oh, Mr. Chair, do you anticipate doing any kind of informational hearings in the next few weeks?
Yes, it's possible.
Possible. Okay. Thank you.